This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
Now, with the holidays around the corner, we're going to focus today on loneliness. Now, it can take many shapes and forms, but what are the experiences of loneliness and isolation among people with visual impairment? Well, according to the UK government, people with disability or long-term health conditions are more likely to experience chronic loneliness than the general population. However, the figures are a bit unclear when it comes to the effect it has on people with a visual impairment. So to tell us a little bit more about their research into this specific area is Dr. Mari Thorsten and Craig Dunlop from Aberdeen University. It is really nice speaking with you both today.
Oh, thank you. We're delighted to be here. Thank you for asking us.
Yeah.
You're looking into this quite, I would say, not researched enough topic in this case. What brought you to this research in the first place?
This project was commissioned by Vision Foundation Fight for Sight, who thought it would be a good starting point from which to fund projects. They wanted to kind of establish the need for the future direction of projects that they would fund. So they invited us to review the literature on sight loss and loneliness in the vision impaired community, and also then to run interviews with people from the sight loss community around this topic, and also to then run a survey. And Craig here did all of the heavy lifting on that bit, but we kind of talked through every aspect of the project together.
As you said yourself, Paulina, in your introduction, the UK government's figures on this suggest that people that are living with a long-term condition or a disability are more likely to identify as being lonely, but that's not kind of broken down any further. And I suppose the kind of top line finding was that we found quite a lot of evidence that people are suffering really quite badly with loneliness and with isolation. And at a level that is maybe a little bit higher than those government figures for people with a visual impairment, and certainly for the figures that people in the general population are reported as experiencing. And it's a really serious thing, because loneliness and isolation, if they're allowed to kind of last for a long time, they can have really serious implications for people's mental and physical health.
Now, obviously, you are looking at this quite wide topic, but what I found quite interesting with your research was this identification that loneliness can have many shapes and forms, which I feel like a lot of people maybe don't realize, that there's this feeling that can come up of still being lonely, even though you are amongst people, maybe amongst your friends, amongst your family.
We spent a long time, didn't we, Craig, talking about what was the difference between loneliness and isolation. And Craig really went through all the literature to see if he could kind of come to a deeper understanding of it. Yeah, loneliness can happen even if you are in a crowd. It's how you are feeling. It's a feeling about the quality of your relationships, whereas isolation is about being on your own. It's about, and some people are happy with that and some people are not happy with that. So it was a really kind of complex backdrop.
You're exactly right there, Marion, that the isolation, I mean, we used to talk about isolation as being the fact, in terms of it's objective, it's something that you can look at, you can see if somebody doesn't have sort of relationships around them or they don't have contacts around them, whereas loneliness is the feeling. And as we're touching on there, that's something that we can all experience if we are in a situation where perhaps there are contacts, but they're not kind of fulfilling the needs that we maybe are looking for from them. So the relationships that we have are not fulfilling us in the way that we're looking for them. And during the interview, some of the most kind of stark examples of loneliness that people were describing was that they were in social situations, but they were being left out, or they were being ignored, or they were being overlooked. And there was a real strong sense of really feeling othered and very, very lonely in those particular moments, because you can hear that there's stuff going on all around you, but you can't really take part in it and people aren't including you in it.
I just want to say we were so grateful to those participants who talked so openly about their experiences of loneliness and isolation. And some of them were hard to listen to. There was such pain in what they were recounting. So I just wanted to say a special thank you. Some of the participants might be listening today. We're very grateful to you for giving so generously of yourself in terms of letting us understand what you're going through.
What would you say are your biggest findings or biggest takeaways from this piece of research you have just done?
I think there's a couple of things. One of the most important things to discover was that, there was so much loneliness going around, and that there was almost kind of two sort of strands to it. There was the fact that, as I touched on a moment ago, the way that people get treated, the way that perhaps physical environments are laid out, the difficulties that people with visual impairments can experience as they go out and about and try and not be isolated, try and get involved in things, that those things can be tackled on a kind of systemic level, an environmental level, or through the education of people and how to communicate and how to approach people with a visual impairment. But there was also a side of it that, because of the experiences that people were having, some of the people that I spoke to, they would talk about isolating themselves because they had had difficult experiences, and people became quite anxious and didn't really want to sort of engage in the things that they maybe did in the past before they had a sight loss condition, and that there was perhaps something around working with people on an individual level to tackle that anxiety.
I just want to underscore that really is a lot of the feelings of loneliness and isolation were things that they don't locate within the person with vision impairment. There's things like, there's social responsibilities here. So it's like the practical barriers to meeting people in terms of the transport and street clutter and accessibilities and the social barriers about people's reactions and exclusions and emotional barriers about like being in relationships and these mental barriers, lastly, about anxiety and fear. And some of that anxiety is really well kind of justified. And I think through this study we really began to understand that anxiety was a real issue for people, and it often like the anxiety led to this avoidance of going out because it's so difficult to go out because it's not access transport's not accessible, streets are not accessible, and that led to a kind of avoidance of going out, which led to sort of isolation, withdrawing, and led to feelings of loneliness, and that often led to kind of feelings of depression. So it felt like a vicious cycle driven by a kind of natural anxiety, which I think was really important in terms of our knowledge of the process of what happens when faced with trying to be connected to people.
What were you hoping after you've gathered your data, you've published your research? What were you hoping would happen with this piece of research going forward?
We're really keen to do research that has kind of like real world impact. I think that's a kind of bottom line for us. And on the back of this project, I think I'm right in saying it's nearly £500,000 spent on projects to try and overcome these barriers to connection for blind and partially sighted people. And on the Fight for Sight Vision Foundation kind of website, there's some beautiful examples of projects that have been supported by the organization. I think there's one called the Oxford Walking Project, and that was just about trying to get a group of blind people out, supported to be out walking and to enjoy kind of being in nature and to be with each other and to like go for a coffee at the end of it. And it was just really a simple solution to what is a difficult problem. So this research, I think, has led to evidence base for funding of practical projects.
It's really gratifying for us and rewarding for us to see that the work that we're doing is having such a real impact on people's lives, and the work that Vision Foundation Fight for Sight are funding is really making a difference for people. But as we spoke about earlier, the projects that are designed to tackle isolation, there is that hope that they will also be able to tackle loneliness, but not necessarily that the two will follow together in that way. So I think one of the other things that for me it's something that I would like to see cut that comes out the back of this research is work that is going to support people in terms of dealing with the effects of actual loneliness. And through that, I think I'm talking really referring to support services that people can reach out to and make connections and try and move on through their loneliness in that way.
My sense of it is that we need a multifaceted approach to tackling loneliness and isolation. So not just a one size fits all. There's got to be different, as Craig was saying there's got to be some place that you can reach out and talk to about how you're feeling. And some of the the quotes that we had from participants were really harrowing. People are in deep distress about feeling like the last human alive, or feeling like they're living in a world of one. That kind of sense of complete kind of despair in some way. So you need somewhere to kind of talk to about that, just some good support to talk to about that. But that's not the only thing. We need to also be addressing the practical barriers as well that are faced. So campaigning for better accessible transport, less street clutter, and more thought about the design for blind and partially sighted people getting out and about.
One of the things that surprised me when I was doing the interviews was the kind of self-discrimination that we saw, the way that people, described themselves. It was really quite difficult to listen to at times because, people were saying things like, my friends have kind of disappeared over the years and I don't really blame them and I wouldn't want to be friends with me. And I think to try and understand that a little bit more and to try and find ways that we can really help people to move on from that kind of way of viewing themselves and being able to establish the connections that might come from being able to view themselves a little bit more positively in that way. That was difficult to listen to some of that
Yeah.
stuff.
What are your recommendations for any sort of research tackling loneliness and visual impairment for any future researchers, or maybe for your next research project?
Wonder if future research might look into the impact that being visually impaired or becoming visually impaired has on people's relationships, because that was something that came out very strongly in the interviews, was that there was wide-ranging and quite profound impacts for people, both in their terms of their romantic relationships, their friendship relationships, making new alliances with people, and that's not something that was evident in any of the previous research that had been done. So it was quite surprising that people spoke about that in such detail and in such depth. And I think it would be interesting to perhaps understand that in a bit more from future studies.
Your piece of research is available online if anyone would like to view it. It can be found by searching for Experiences of Loneliness and Isolation Among People with Visual Impairment, a review of literature. Now, of course, Mari Craig, it has been really nice speaking with you on the Happy Hour, and thank you so much for highlighting such an important subject today with us.
We'd love to be. We're very, very happy to be on the Happy Hour. And I'm a great fan of Claire Sisk. I think she's doing such a wonderful job in raising the profile of blind and partially sighted people through social media. This is just such a wonderful advancement. And, I just want to say I'm a big fan and keep up that great work. Yes.
Thank you so much again.
Thanks very much, Pauline.
Thanks, Paulina.